Welcome to the Q1 2022 Tenaris S.A. Earnings Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. After the speaker's presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star one on your telephone. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. If you require any further assistance, please press star zero. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Giovanni Sardagna. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Gigi, and welcome to Tenaris 2022 first quarter conference call. Before we start, I would like to remind you that we will be discussing forward-looking information in this call and that our actual results may vary from those expressed or implied during this call. With me on the call today are Paolo Rocca, our Chairman and CEO, Alicia Mondolo, our Chief Financial Officer, Guillermo Vogel, Vice Chairman and member of our Board of Directors, Germán Curá, Vice Chairman and member of our Board of Directors, Gabriel Podskubka, President of our Eastern Hemisphere Operations, and Luca Zanotti, President of our U.S. Operations. Before passing over the call to Paolo for his opening remarks, I would like to briefly comment our quarterly results. Our sales in the first quarter of 2022 reached $2.4 billion, doubling those of the previous year and up 15% sequentially, mainly driven by higher prices in the Americas and higher shipments of line pipe in Europe and South America. Average selling prices in our tubes operating segment increased 41% compared to the corresponding quarter of 2021 and 12% sequentially. Our EBITDA for the quarter, which included $12 million of severance charges related to the discontinuation of our industrial equipment business in Brazil and the closure of NKK tubes in Japan, was up 30% sequentially to $627 million. Our EBITDA margin reached 26.5% as higher prices more than offset increases in energy and raw material costs. During the quarter, working capital increased by $609 million, mainly reflecting higher trade receivables following the increase in sales, and higher inventories partially offset by an increase in trade payables. With the negative operating cash flow of $27 million and capital expenditure of $67 million, our free cash flow for the quarter was negative for $94 million, but at the end of the quarter, our net cash position was $562 million. Now I will ask Paolo to say a few words before we open the call to questions.
Thank you very much, Giovanni. Good morning to all of you. We are pleased to have our team here in Luxembourg for this conference call after more than 2 years of pandemic-induced travel restriction. We are visiting customer again, and all around Tenaris, our teams are meeting up while we maintain the benefit of flexible working routine. Since our last conference call, the world has changed. The Russian invasion of Ukraine is deeply affecting the global politics and markets. Energy markets are being disrupted as government, particularly in Europe and the United States, look to replace Russian exports and impose financial sanctions on individuals, companies, and institutions. Security of supply has become a prime concern as prices rise along with concern about supply shortfalls. At the same time, inflation has increased all around the world, casting doubt on future global growth. Tenaris, with the unique positioning it has developed around the world, has an important role to play in supporting oil and gas companies in their commitment to develop regional energy independence and local value chains in a time of supply chain disruption and economic uncertainty. In North America, we have been quick to accompany the recovery in drilling activity following the pandemic-induced collapse in 2020. Since the recovery began, we have been steadily ramping up production in our U.S. industrial system, adding 1,400 new employees over the last 18 months. Today, we have 3,100 employees in the United States and expect to add a further 700 in the rest of the year. Our modern Bay City mill has been operating at full capacity since March, and we are reopening many of the facilities we had to shut down following the outbreak of the pandemic. We have gained a head start over our competitors, and this put us in a good position to respond to the requirement of our customers as they expand their operation in the region. Latin America is an important producer of oil and gas for the Western Hemisphere as it develops its prolific deep water and shale reserves. Tenaris, with the extensive local manufacturing and service capabilities it has built over the years in Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, and Mexico,
please remain on the line. Your conference will resume shortly. Please remain on the line. Your conference will resume shortly. Pardon me, speakers, you may continue.
Yes, sorry for the interruption. I understand that I was commenting on about Europe. As Europe seeks additional supplies of natural gas to replace imports from Russia, new pipelines will have to be developed in the Mediterranean and Black Seas. Tenaris has extensive expertise in supplying complex fast-track pipeline project from its plant in Italy and Brazil. We are already supplying the Sakarya pipeline project, the Turkish part of the Black Sea, and expect to supply the Cassiopeia pipeline project in the Straits of Sicily later this year. The Middle East will be an important supplier of oil and gas to other regions in any global scenario. Tenaris has developed a strong presence in the region with local manufacturing content and service capabilities. Our sales to this region will increase significantly in the rest of the year as the region activity increases and stocking activity comes to an end. Aramco is switching from its previous practice of awarding quarterly tenders to awarding long-term contracts to local pipe providers, including our recently awarded 10-year contract for the supply of premium products. Now, I will say a few words about our first quarter results, in which we pass a number of long-standing performance milestones. Sales were up 100% year-on-year, and our EBITDA margin above 26% reached a level last seen in 2014. Our quarterly net income came in strongly at $500 million, a level we have not reached since 2008. In addition, we had a record volume of seamless pipe shipment, which reflected the good performance of our industrial system, ramping up production in a short time. Working capital increased during the quarter, supporting our growth in sales. For the next quarter, we expect to return to positive free cash flow and to reduce our days of operating working capital. At the end of March, we published our 2021 sustainability report, which comment on the action we are taking to improve our sustainability, including our progress on reducing our carbon emission intensity. For the first time, the main numbers in this report, including our Scope 3 carbon emission, were audited. The current market environment is one which plays to Tenaris' strength and the exceptional positioning that we have built up over the many years. We are performing well and expect to exceed these results in the quarter ahead. I will stop here and pass the call for any question you may have. And sorry again for the disruption in the communication.
As a reminder, to ask a question, you will need to press star 1 on your telephone. To withdraw your question, press the pound key. Please stand by while we compile the Q&A roster. Our first question comes from the line of Connor Linnane from Morgan Stanley. Your line is now open.
Yeah, thank you. In the release, you alluded to some of the concerns that we've been hearing, which is the increase in raws input prices. And it certainly seems like you have confidence you're going to be able to offset that with pricing. I guess we'd just love some additional color in terms of what's driving that confidence, and then what are you seeing in the market that's giving you that conviction?
Thank you, Conor. Well, first of all, I think that there are two different environment, one for the Americas, United States, Canada, and South America, in which the imbalance between supply and demand is driving prices up. We have seen the Pipe Logix moving even yesterday very strongly, and the international pricing that is also rising, but in which the imbalance, let's say, is moving and allowing us to raise prices, but probably at a different pace. Now, what is driving our confidence in pricing is the fact that we perceive that the imbalance between an oil industry that is aggressively addressing the need to substitute the dependency from Russia, and our ability and the ability of our competitor in raising level of production. We are moving up more slowly. It's not easy to hire and incorporate people and, let's say, ramp up operation. We're doing this, I think, pretty effectively, but still we perceive that there is a tension and the prices are sustained by this. The increasing cost is strong, also due to the disruption in the supply chain for our input, but we are able to transfer the increasing cost to our client in this environment, and we think that we can continue to do so for the coming quarters.
That's helpful. Thank you. You were alluding to the troubles ramping capacity. Can you just speak to what you're seeing in terms of competitor behavior? Certainly, we're aware that you're ramping some of your mills in the U.S. Are competitors responding as well? And what do you see as the likely, if you can put a number to it, growth in competitive capacity? I'm particularly interested in the U.S. given the shortfall there, but if you have any comments globally, that would be appreciated as well.
Well, globally, the conflict deriving from Russian invasion is creating disruption in the supply chain. Ukrainian supplier and Russian supplier, to some extent, are losing access to the international market. On the other side, the disruption caused by COVID in China is also to some extent affecting the global supply. Now, in the United States, the ramp-up depends very much from our ability to incorporate additional headcount, to train them and to prepare them. I think our competitor is basically doing similar effort and are also raising their capacity, but we have, let's say, limitation, and our competitor will also. In the case of United States, there is room for increasing capacity on the welded side, but also this is to some extent conditioned by the high price of hot rolled coils and some of the uncertainty on the future price of hot rolled coils. So it's not easy today to lock in supply and price for this producer. Luca, maybe you can add on the difficulty you perceive in our ramp-up and in the movement in our competitor, in the moment specifically in North America.
Yes, thank you, Paolo. Conor, here, to get the production back again, you need first to bring up plants that have been idle and this is not as easy as it would look like. Second, you need to recruit people, and then you need to train people. And this is an effort that in this environment is very complicated, and there is no difference for anybody that is trying to execute this ramp-up. The good news for us is that we started off back in October 2020, this process, and so we have already been able to bring in more than 1,300 employees that at this stage are trained and are the core on which we're going to base our expansion on the following 700 that are coming in. Just to give you a number, for us to be able to get 1,300 employees in our facilities, we have run through 25,000 prospects. So this is the size of the endeavor that we've been in. And I believe that whoever is trying to do this now is going to be facing more difficulties than the ones that the first that started, and certainly we are among those, had. As far as you are concerned, we are according to plan. All our plants are already up and running, which is already good at this stage. And now it's a matter of manning the additional crew that we need to bring everything to the maximum capacity.
Thank you, Luca.
Thanks very much for the comprehensive answer.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Alan Spence from Jefferies. Your line is now open.
Thanks, and good afternoon, guys. We've got two questions. I'll take them one at a time. The first one's on guidance, and you've been very helpful around the revenue and margins for the second quarter and the second half, but only a free cash flow comment on Q2. I'm just wondering what's preventing you from guiding more confidently around what you see free cash flow doing in the second half.
As we explain in our press release, we will be reducing the days of operative working capital in the coming quarters. At the same time, the level of invoicing and revenues will continue to grow. So we are, on one side, for increasing prices, raising, and also to some extent of volume, we will increase our sales. On the other side, we need to build up the inventories and some of the routes that are entering to operation today requires a shipment from one plant to the other for finishing or for treatment. And these are routes that has relatively longer lead time and require relatively higher level of inventory. In spite of this, the number of days of operative consumption in the coming quarter, we expect the days to go down. And as I say, we will be able to have a healthy free cash flow coming from our sales.
Got it. Thank you. The second one is just on the seamless market share gains. I think last quarter you talked about them being potentially more sticky than in the past, and we've seen that with welded declining again. Where do you think welded could be in terms of your shipment mix in, say, 6 to 12 months once you've got those facilities back to full capacity?
Well, basically, we will see welded production in the United States to increase slowly while we ramp up some operation. This will not be very fast, but in the fourth quarter of the year, the welded component driven by the pipeline South America will kick in and will be very relevant. In Argentina, we are supposed to supply the pipes for the pipelines connecting Vaca Muerta to center of the countries. This is a relevant 180,000 tons of pipes that will be welded and supplied to the market starting for the fourth quarter. So welded pipes will increase for the two reasons. Even considering that today in the United States there is a scope for welded pipe is not unlimited. It's more focus on the surface casing that is required mostly and could be supplied by welded, no?
All right, that's really helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Frank McGann from Bank of America. Your line is now open.
Okay, thank you very much. I have two questions. The first one would be, in terms of the anti-dumping case, what are you seeing right now, or how are you thinking of that if you get at least the initial ruling is negative, how that will affect your business? The second question would be, excuse me, a little bit bigger, longer term oriented. With the changes that we've seen, I mean, 12 months ago or 18 months ago, the oil industry looked extraordinarily different than it does right now. Now there seems to be a new burst of life. I'm wondering how you're seeing that changing the longer term competitive landscape as well as the energy transition pace and how that might affect your strategy over the medium and long term.
Thank you, Frank. On the first point, basically, anti-dumping requires definition of determination of margin and determination of the injury to the industry. Frankly, I think that in this condition, in today's condition, there is no way that could be injury could be determined for an industry that is showing record results in the last quarter and in the coming quarter. So, I mean, this is not, in our view, something possible. But independently from the margin that could be determined, I think we can and we will continue to maintain a ramp up of our operation in the United States, which is number one, because in the end we need to operate on the shorter supply line that we can have, but to some extent also to continue to supply some of the product that we could produce or import from other countries. This is how we see let's say, the evolution of the situation for the anti-dumping. Our number one priority is the ramp-up of the operation in the United States. We are focused on this. But we are very confident that we can continue to import the product that are needed or that are required and in which we have been present for many, many years from imports. Now, on the second point, I think it's very clear that the conflict and the disruption in all the market, but mainly energy market first, and not only energy, but also agriculture and steel, and the geopolitical impact on inflation and on let's say the possible impact on GDP growth is changing all the variable that we were considering 12 or 18 months ago, and also is a shifting priority. In this moment, Europe needs to focus on how to substitute or reduce dependence from gas from Russia and oil from Russia. And there is a clear drive to strengthen sourcing from different countries, but also from renewable and maybe even accelerating energy transition. But this is not the same in other region. In other region, the need for independence could be achieved by maintaining high level of investment in the gas and oil industry, Could it be for LNG or for directly production of oil and gas? There is the consideration that some of the reserves will remain stranded in Russia for a different reason of gas and of oil, and that the world needs to make up for this loss in the short, medium, and to some extent, like in gas, long term. This requires investment in the oil industry. So the priority are moving. This doesn't mean that energy transition is out of the agenda, but it means that we need to consider also the transition. That is the only way to allow for the energy transition to have, to get in a smooth way.
Thank you. I'm wondering perhaps if you'd have an update on your project in the Italian plant and the hydrogen project, how that's going?
Well, we are advancing. You know, it's a pilot project. I mean, we are checking and testing the use of hydrogen. We have different projects in which we are testing technology. We are testing technology for supplying our furnaces with hydrogen, and this project is going on. The furnace is in fabrication, and we will continue to this with the burner that could operate with gas or with hydrogen, and we are also proceeding in the project for production of hydrogen that could supply this. But the size of this project today is still, let's say, the size of a pilot project, will not change the matrix. What is changing the matrix are the big investments we are doing in the wind farm at the moment in Argentina. These are the projects that will, let's say, make us move towards our target of CO2 emission reduction. As you know, is 30% by 2030. The wind farm today is a project in Argentina, but we are analyzing and we are in our portfolio what we can do in the different region in which we operate that could drive us to our target.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Arun Jayaram from JP Morgan Chase. Your line is now open.
Yeah, good morning. I was wondering if you could go through kind of your thoughts on the supply-demand balance, you know, in the U.S. You know, we think that demand could approach, call it 2019 levels of 5 million tons per annum, and we think effective productive capacity is around 3.7 million tons per annum, but would love to get your thoughts on that, and again, how you think that the impact of the Russian-Ukraine conflict, you know, could impact, you know, the market here in the U.S. as well as internationally, because we did, you know, TMK has been an important supplier to the global OCTG market.
Thank you, Arun. I will ask Luca to comment on how we see the supply-demand balance in the States and the role. I think, frankly, for TMK, there is no scope, basically, for any operation in the United States type. But Luca, you can comment on the overall balance.
Yes, Arun, good afternoon, good morning. No, I believe that your numbers in terms of consumption is pretty in line with what we're going to see. We may see something even slightly higher if the rigs are continuing operating at this level of efficiency. Let's remember that now, according to Baker Hughes, we see slightly less than 700, but these 700 are all high specs rigs, and so the consumption or the pipe intensity is pretty high. But overall, bottom line, I believe that you are in the ballpark. In terms of supply, well, it is difficult to come up with an exact number. And why is that difficult? Because you don't only need to look at what is the rolling capacity, but also what is the heat treatment and finishing capacity. So on that one, I cannot help too much, given the difficulties that you would have to put together a number. But the results of the supply, demand supply balance is certainly tight. And this is what we are seeing. And this is also exacerbating, as I was trying to say before, by the difficulties to ramp all these facilities up to maximum maximum capacity. And to conclude on TMK, TMK is zero role today in the United States. Historically, they were covering a space between 2.5 to 3% of the market. Now they are not importing any pipe in the United States. And personally, I don't see this changing in the short term. And so this is an additional supply disruption element that needs to be taken in consideration in all the evaluation that we are doing here, also related to the anti-dumping.
Yeah. Well. Thank you, Luca. We also had to take into consideration that really the Russian, as you know, the API has withdrawn any certification, API certification to the Russian mills, and for the Russian mills is today almost very difficult, if not impossible, to operate not only in the United States but worldwide because of the difficulties to overcome the financial restriction, the logistic restriction, the insurance and movement of vessels in and out Russia. So part of the disruption is for sure the disruption that is hitting on the Russian producer. That's one of the reasons also that the price are solid also outside the United States.
Okay, great, great. And just my follow-up is I was wondering if you could comment on, you know, what you're seeing kind of internationally and, you know, your expectations as we start to see a bit more of a recovery in international, what this could mean for volumes as we, you know, come into 2023 and the margin profile that you expect from your international parts of the business. You know, you did basically anticipate EBITDA margins in this 27% range of the back half, but I wanted to get some thoughts on what you're seeing internationally.
Yeah, yeah, as you were saying, we're saying now we consider that we should be able to manage and to maintain this margin in this range for this year, thanks also to the strength and increase in shipment from the Eastern Hemisphere from this international business. But I would ask to Gabriel to give an overview of what can we expect from that side of our business.
Sure, thank you, Paolo. Good morning, Aaron. Yes, indeed, the drilling in the Middle East continues on a solid recovery path. This is something that we have anticipated. We are seeing our customers increasing demand. This is something that we will see starting in this second quarter throughout the rest of the year and into 2023. We have very good visibility with our long-term agreements in the core countries of the Middle East that give us this confidence. We'll have a first jump starting in the second quarter and probably later in the year as the pipelines as well in Qatar will join, and an improved pricing environment will also contribute to a further increase into revenues into the next year. Also, given the geopolitics and the things about energy security that Paolo was commenting before, we are starting to see in the last few weeks also an increase of new projects related especially to gas given the new conditions. We are expecting the projects in the Black Sea, in the Eastern Mediterranean, that are still under a study phase, that those can come on stream in the next few months. We're also starting to see in the Sub-Saharan Africa new short-cycle gas projects in Congo and in Mozambique. Also with a renewed price of oil, Angola expected activity to increase. Also fast-track projects in Ivory Coast. So there is a lot of movement and increase in demand. And also we are engaging with our customers, given the increase in raw materials, logistics and energy, into revision of our pricing structures. We have formulas, but given the pace of the increases that we have suffered in the last few months, in some cases we are accelerating the impact of those formulas or even claiming surcharges to offset some of the cost increases that might not be fully reflected in the formulas as well. And certainly new offers are already considering new expectations on pricing and margins, given that the market for our products is increasing strongly and we are perceiving a tighter market condition. So this will take some time, as usual in the Eastern Hemisphere. The pace and the inertia on these price improvements are going to be seeing later, but towards the end of the year, into 2023, we expect both volume and pricing improvement.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Marc Bianchi from Cowen. Your line is now open.
Hi, thank you. I was hopeful that you could provide a little more precision on the outlook for second quarter. You talked about growth in sales, higher volumes. Maybe if you could help quantify that and what the mix of price and volume looks like.
Yeah. Thank you, Mark. Well, I think we will continue to increase our revenues in the range of the mid-teens for the next quarter. And let's say margin will be solid. We say stable margin. There are, you know, in our portfolio we have still some order with previous price, previous to this ramp up of prices, that are phasing out gradually, and the new order are coming in at a higher price. So we expect also to be able to increase prices over this. We don't know exactly how the impact that cost will have. Because we don't know if there could be some disruption in the gas supply, especially in Europe. So we are cautious from this point of view. There could be some disruption in this gas flow, which could be, something that we may take into consideration. But all in all, we expect increasing revenue, as I say, and increasing price. And margin in line with the margin we are having today.
Yeah. Okay. And so that would put you at another really nice positive revision to where consensus is for second quarter. And, you know, we've seen a really nice improvement in your business over the last several quarters, but it doesn't seem like the stock gets a lot of credit for that. I think it goes back to maybe some of the questions that Connor was asking about sort of the durability of margins, and I think investors fear that you're kind of at peak margins and things could roll over. I understand next couple quarters that looks very strong, but maybe I want to give you the opportunity to talk about maybe anything that's structurally changed in the business that gives you confidence in the durability of margins maybe through cycle.
Well, I think that the conflict is changing the world, and the oil and the energy industry has to react. This is a structural change. Tenaris is very well positioned to respond to this change and to support the energy industry in this repositioning that will imply substitution of oil and gas coming from Russia. I think Tenaris is very well positioned. And the present course of things, we should also be able to increase our margin to some extent. The point is that we have uncertainty on the cost side, depending mostly from the cost of energy in Europe, which is a factor that we cannot really control and could lead to disruption. That could be a factor. And the second point is if increasing inflation and reaction by central bank may drive down the growth, this could be also something that could be, let's say, a factor over time. So on one side, the fundamentals are driving us at a higher margin level, but we have to keep in mind, let's say, the uncertainty, and I imagine that the market also is taking this into consideration when they look at the situation of all of the oil and service company, no?
Yep, yep. Thank you for the comments. I'll turn it back.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Carsten Rigg from Credit Suisse. Your line is now open.
Thank you very much. A few questions left from my side. I will take them one by one. The first one is again on the global uncertainties, as you already highlighted. We talk about a lot about the supply side, which is the easier part of the equation here. Have you actually run a few recessionary scenarios? And what could that actually mean for the implication for the OCTG demand? Is there any risk, in your opinion, on the demand side? That's the first one.
I can tell you this is more speculative because, I mean, nobody knows. But I imagine that the inflation is driving a reaction by the central bank. This will drive some slowdown of GDP growth. In Europe, for sure, and in the rest of the world also. The disruption of the COVID in China is unpredictable to today, but still will contribute to this. In spite of this, I think that the conflict and the change of circumstances that is affecting the world is a long-term trend, and the energy industry has to react. So in my scenario, price of energy will remain strong, even in an environment in which the world enters into a mild recession.
Perfect. The second question, and sorry for coming back on this, is on the second half 22 guidance, which was very strong. Do you already have something in your order backlog which gives you the confidence? Is your order backlog already filling quite nicely in the second half? Or is it just because of your anticipation of rising steel prices and the supply-demand shifts you actually anticipate in the second half that you give that guidance?
No, we are really very much booked till the end of the year and 2023. We are, as I was saying, ramping up our operation. I mean, demand is there, no doubt on this. On the side of the cost, as I say before, could come some uncertainty because, for instance, the cost of energy in Europe is a question mark. If there is, any disruption in the supply of gas, this will have an impact on the entire supply chain. Demand is there.
Good. The other question I have is pretty much on Hickman. In general, you announced boosting the production in your welded mill here in Hickman, but we have not seen that in the numbers yet. Instead, the welded shipments actually dropped to the lowest number recorded in more than a decade. Did the expansion of volumes already start, or has the process been postponed by the reversal of the HRC prices in North America market?
Yeah, I will ask Luca to comment on this. Remember that our welded component is always driven by two side of the business, the big line pipe, mainly from Argentina and from Brazil, and the ERW line, mainly in the States. So this is sometimes is, I mean, it's influencing this trend. But Luca, how are we picking up, ramping up on the welded?
Hi, Carsten. Good morning. As I was saying before, the Hickman is nicely ramping up. We actually have all the lines operating over there. Now, we are trying to bring up shifts, but we produce already ERW pipes in March. We are producing even more in April, and the production is going to come up according to plans. The plant is operating well. We have done a good job in maintaining while it was idle and bringing it back up. As I was already commenting today, the main bottleneck over there, but this is not a Tenaris concern, it's a worldwide, or at least a U.S. concern, is the capability of hiring and training people that can safely and effectively operate the plant. But no, the ramp up is not being held back by the HRC. HRC today is a moment in which there is enough space for a welded to come in.
Perfect,
yeah,
thank you. One last question. In your fourth quarter presentation, you highlighted significant improvement in the Middle East and Africa volumes, but revenues in the first quarter at least dropped another 13% quarter on quarter. Is the recovery postponed, or are other factors hindering currently a recovery?
Again, on this, Carsten, I will ask Gabriel to give you an answer. It's correct that in the first quarter we were pretty short, but I understand that we will be increasing faster now, no?
Yes, Carsten. Indeed, we were anticipating already in the previous quarters that the recovery on the volumes in the Middle East and Africa will start in the second quarter. This is what we're expecting. It will be an important first jump, second quarter and third, and then further on, a fourth quarter and into 2023, a further increase. So this was already as planned, and we confirmed the increasing guidance starting the second quarter.
Perfect. Thank you very much for answering the question.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the line of Alessandro Pozzi from Mediobanca. Your line is now open.
Oh, hi there. Good afternoon. I just have a couple of questions. The first one, I think in your opening remarks, you mentioned a couple of times potential opportunities when it comes to new pipeline contracts. You mentioned Cassiopeia and Vaca Muerta. Can you maybe just give us, again, the numbers in terms of volumes that you expect from those opportunities? I understand that you mentioned 180,000. Is that like a Q4 number, or is it a number for a project? So if you can give us a bit more color there. And also on the Vaca Muerta pipeline, I was wondering, is that project going ahead, or is still requiring financing from the government?
Thank you, Alessandro. I mentioned pipeline because we have some pipeline that is seamless that will come and will be delivered in the coming quarter. This is Zakaria to some extent, the Qatar gas expansion is important. Some of this Qatar is partly welded also. And then we have the South America. With the situation and the prices of LNG, Argentina, that has huge resources in Vaca Muerta, is moving on with investment in infrastructure to reduce the cost of buying LNG in winter and to start developing the opportunity for export gradually. I mean, it will take time, over time, from Vaca Muerta. I think that the pipeline, the first one, is only one first part, first step in a much larger infrastructural investment. I think Argentina, that in this moment, as you know, is a high inflation country with an agreement with monetary fund, is not a situation that I would call stable in macroeconomic terms. But still, I think the first steps is financed, and there are other investments in pipelines, in increasing capacity of export of oil from the region, increasing capacity of moving gas from one to the other, from the field to the treatment plant, that are underway, and we are very well positioned in all of these. Now, there will be a second stage, second steps over time, for sure. Argentina needs to develop entire infrastructure for this. So this is part of something that will move on. So seamless, number of projects that I mentioned, pipeline in Argentina, important. And then there are something that is more, let's say, not so close, but that will come, that is development of East Mediterranean and Black Sea, and the lines that connect the Mediterranean source of gas outside Russia with Europe. These are essential. Europe will have to substitute the gas from Russia in a period of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. It's something that will go on over time. These, in some cases, are complex pipelines under sea, offshore, like in the case of the East Mediterranean, but are high potential and are areas and project in which we are highly specialized from our plant in Europe and Brazil. So opportunity in short term, large volume in the second half of 22, and I think important opportunity going on, 23.
Thank you. I believe you mentioned 180,000 before. Was that related to a specific project?
Yes, this is just the first stage of the pipeline connecting Vaca Muerta with the center of the country. Then there should be a second stage of this that is also of a similar size, important. But there are other projects under discussion. Now, the question of financing will also depend from, let's say, the evolution of the macroeconomic situation in Argentina. I think there is financing for the first stage, and the second will require, that the government recover access to the financial system to be able to support expansion of this infrastructure. But it should be possible, considering that the cost of gas in Argentina is very low and is very competitive. So in the end, there are many reasons to build this infrastructure and the connection from Vaca Muerta to the international market.
Okay, thank you. Have a second one quickly. You mentioned stable margin in Q2. I guess that's because you have a lot of uncertainties. You have potential disruption of gas from Russia, you have the potential anti-dumping case. But if those uncertainties were to be removed, should we assume a further increase in margins, maybe towards the 30% if we don't have the anti-dumping or if we don't have any disruptions in the supply from Russia, since it looks like that you're still increasing cost, you're still increasing prices for your clients?
Well, we're aiming for this, and I think should be possible, but we have to take into consideration a situation that is presenting many challenges. So that's the other reason why we are saying, and this is how we are guiding the market in this environment, which apparently situation could be more positive, but we have to take into consideration that there are uncertainty on different fronts.
Yeah, understood. All right. Thank you very much. I'll turn it back.
Thank you. At this time, I am showing no further questions. I would like to turn the call back over to Giovanni Sardagna for closing remarks.
Well, sorry again for the technical problems we had during our opening remarks, and well, thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.